Are you ready to win?
Yeah.
Come join the winning circle.
Fuck with the winners, baby.
Put up your hands for me, baby.
Put them up.
And do it like we're supposed to. Ooh.
Yeah.
Cause we're gonna win.
It's your champ, the voice. And boy, do it feel good to win. I stack them wins weekly. And when I tell your brother locked in, I feel like everybody just an extra in my quest to repeat. But while y'all tag along, go ahead and take some of these gems with you. So that way you can feel like a winner too. Oh yeah. Let's get to it. Episode 92. Still a long season ahead, but they say you gotta enjoy the process. And boy, am I gonna enjoy this process as long as I can. And speaking of the process, we just had two amazing performances the other night with the process, Joel Embiid dropping 70. And Cat, trying to prove he's the best big man shooter ever, he went out there, dropped 62, knocking down 10 three-pointers on 67%. And all of this was on the anniversary of Kobe's 81 against the Raptors. Couldn't have been scripted any better. Shit, I mean, even Durant had 43 that night. So, epic output of offense from the NBA. But let's look at some league news that happened in the previous week. On Tuesday, January 16th, we had Embiid versus Jokic. Big man versus big man. And it was everything that I could have hoped for. I'm just glad they didn't try to duck each other, because it always feels like these guys are trying to duck each other. And what I took from that matchup was Jokic don't want these problems with Embiid's if they meet in the finals, because it's going to be a situation. When it got to winning time and Jokic had to start guarding Embiid, how Shaq say, barbecue chicken. It was barbecue chicken. And Shaq always talk about being able to muster timely stops. And Jokic, he just looked gassed, like he couldn't hang. So they have a rematch coming Saturday, and it'll be this time in Denver. I'm hoping we get another close game. And if we do, I'll be watching to see if Jokic can step it up defensively come crunch time. As we all know, there was a death in the NBA. Warriors assistant coach Dejan Mihajlovic, he had a heart attack at a team dinner, passed away. Two games were postponed because of this. And that, you know, that's appropriate, of course. For fantasy, if we look back to past postponed games, either due to poor weather conditions or whatever the case may be, those games are kind of normally rescheduled. You normally get a game or two rescheduled coming out of the All-Star break. Now, the Warriors, they're not going to have both of their games that were canceled rescheduled right out the gate coming out of All-Star break. But I think there's a high probability that we at least see one rescheduling during that time frame, and then probably another one later on in the season. So I'm not sure if it's going to help anybody out as far as fantasy playoffs, giving them an extra game during that time. But I did read an article stating that they were planning on rescheduling those games. Anywho, this guy, he's 46. I'm 40, so I felt some type of way about that when I heard the news. I don't even know who he was, to be honest with you, but it just feels appropriate at least to do a little bit of moment of silence. All right, so as we continue to look at what happened in week 13, Indiana and Toronto, they agreed to a trade. Indiana sent Bruce Brown, Jordan Nwora, and picks to Toronto for Pascal Siakam. Now, quick side note. And I'll get back to the trade, I promise. But Indiana rushed Haliburton back from his hamstring injury to, I don't know, do what. But I guess they wanted to showcase their new 1-2 punch in Haliburton and Siakam. And that was just stupid, because now Haliburton has re-aggravated his injury. And we talked about this in the last episode. Hamstrings, calf strains, those should be weak injuries at the minimum. You look at sports like football, that's always the case. But for some reason, when it comes to hoop, these players always seem to be rushing back. And it just don't make no sense to me, because hoop is a sport that demands a lot more movement out of its players. So you would think that the sports scientists that we always hearing so much about, get rest, this and that, that they wouldn't constantly get this wrong. I know I ain't take no classes in kinesiology or whatever it is to study the body movements. And maybe you think I'm wrong. Maybe I only have anecdotal evidence. But I look at a guy like Jaylen Brown, who, if you look at his injury log the past two seasons, he always got a month or so where he has to go in and out of the lineup because he's coming back and dealing with hamstring management. I just really think the NBA does a piss poor job of managing hamstrings, where they let players come back early, they re-aggravate it, and then now they want to manage it. But I promise I get back to the trade, so let's go ahead and do that. We look at Jordan Nwora. He hasn't played that much, so he unlikely will get any type of boost by getting traded to Toronto. That's going to make him fantasy relevant. Probably not even going to be a streamable player for Toronto. Bruce Brown, though, I think he'll likely get traded to a contender. I can't see Toronto keeping him. It looks like they're tearing this thing down, and there's plenty of contenders that are going to want to use Bruce Brown's services. And then when you look at it on the nerd side of things,
nerd alert!
Are you trying to play GM and get into Masai Ujiri's mind? You got to take into consideration that Bruce Brown has a front-loaded contract that's basically can be treated like an expiring contract because his next year is a team option. So contenders would look at that and be like, cool, even if it doesn't work out, we don't have to keep him on the books for next year. So from a money standpoint, from a on-the-court standpoint, it just makes sense that there's going to be a lot of contenders asking about Bruce Brown before the trade deadline. For fantasy, to me, that just means put him on the watch list. I don't really know how much he's going to... I mean, he will play while he's in Toronto, but I don't really think we'll be able to understand what Bruce Brown's value is until we know what his final landing place is. Siakam, they should be a great fit in Indiana. His stats, I don't think they change much. You would think whenever Haliburton gets healthy, that it's going to help Siakam, especially average more points, just because the way Indiana plays and how well they move the ball. But I think the biggest thing for fantasy is if you roster Siakam, you got to be happy that now he's playing or will be playing meaningful games come the end of the season, because Indiana's going to be wanting to stay out of that play-in spot. Because right now they're 24-19 and a few games above the Heat and the Magic in the standings. Okay, so I know you guys are probably getting tired of me talking about all this TV contract stuff, and I'm sorry, but I'm really just fascinated trying to figure out where the money leads.
Nerd alert!
Anyway, story came out that the juggernaut, Amazon, they have bought into Diamond Sports, which is the conglomerate of Bally Sports that plays all the regional games. And they're basically trying to help them avoid bankruptcy. So this move, it gives Amazon a foothold to be able to broadcast games over Prime Video. Now, there's still a lot of stuff that has to be done with court, and they got to get this approved, this kind of new partnership approved through the court system, all this kind of good stuff. So you'll probably see MLB games on Prime way before you see NBA games. But the fact that Amazon will now have inside knowledge to the framework of how the NBA games get broadcast, I think it just makes them a little bit more appealing to the NBA come time for the new TV negotiations. Plus, if you think about it too, Prime Video, they already got Thursday Night Football. They got games that they broadcast for the WNBA, and they are the exclusive broadcaster of the women's or the WNBA Commissioner's Cup. So there's already kind of a secondhand relationship there with the NBA. All that's to say is, I might have to start buttering up to my wife to see if I can get this Prime Video subscription. So just something to think about. You might want to start looking into how much a Prime Video subscription costs if you don't already have one. And final piece of news, this is more just kind of haha comedy than anything else. And like everyone that likes basketball, I was excited to hear that the Indianapolis International Airport was putting a full-size basketball court inside of the airport to honor the All-Star Weekend festivities. And I was like, ooh, this is going to be amazing. So come to find out, there was some guy that did a TikTok. He flew to Indiana just to see if he could shoot on the courts and fly back. and he exposed that the court was just a giant sticker.
What?
Which, okay, I mean, I guess I really can't expect him to put down a full wood court, but still, that would have been dope. And then when the guy tried to shoot on the hoops, he realized that there were plastic lids on top of the hoops to prevent people from shooting.
What?
And I get it, you know. You can't allow yourself to get sued if somebody gets hurt trying to hoop. But damn, is that a tease, man. Because I'd have been so excited to get out there and just throw up a shot just for the sake of throwing up some shots. That being said, though, there's still going to be assholes like myself who that are going to, well, I'm not going to All-Star, but people like me that are going to All-Star break. They're going to get there. They're going to bring their ball, and they're going to try to shoot anyways. Or there's going to be a group of friends, just like the homies, that when we all get together, we get a little immature, and somebody's going to try to play that dunk game. Somebody going to try to phantom dunk on a real hoop and pull the shit down, pull the net down or something like that. Get injured, try to jump over their friend, trying to dunk on them for a TikTok for shits and giggles and all this kind of stuff. So anyways, pretty cool idea. Wish you could shoot on it, but I guess I understand. We move on to some of the injuries that happened in week 13. And there weren't a lot of injuries, but there's always a few. We'll start off with Jaime Jaquez. He missed all of week 13 with a groin injury. And in the last episode, we talked about how Miami always seems to be dealing with all these type of injuries. And that was part of the reason why Jaime was being allowed to play so much. He was always filling into somebody. But now we got Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo. They're all healthy. So with Jaime down, I don't really think that there's a move for somebody to get picked up for fantasy purposes, but the injury does probably provide more stability in the rotation for Caleb Martin. On the 18th of January, Zach LaVine, he left the game early versus Toronto due to an ankle sprain. It was initially reported that he was going to miss close to 2 weeks, but the recent news stated that he was going to be traveling with the team on their road trip, so there is a chance that he comes back earlier. Still, it's hard not to be a little skeptical and think that maybe he milks the injury, hoping that he gets traded before he has to come back and play with the Bulls. That being said, the Bulls, they've been playing the majority of the season without LaVine, so there's really not much change from a fantasy perspective. If you look at the 7 games that LaVine played in before he got re-injured, he was averaging 15.6 points, 5.9 rebounds, 5.3 assists, and 2.3 three-pointers made at 39%. So he wasn't really pressing. When he got back in the lineup, he kind of just fell in line. Really, I guess the injury just kind of opens up more consistent opportunity for Ayo Dosunmu. In the last 2 games, he's been pretty hot. He's averaging 16.5 points, 1.5 steals, 1 block, and 1.5 three-pointers made at 43%. And finally, we kind of discussed it a little bit earlier, but Tyrese Haliburton, he came back. Announced on January 21st that he was going to be out because he re-aggravated his hamstring and he's expected to at least miss another week. The obvious add, TJ McConnell. In the 9 games that Haliburton has missed, McConnell has averaged 11.3 points, 7.1 assists, and 1.2 steals. We look at the league news and it was a quiet week for the league chat, yickety yak. Sorry, I just love when Ernie does it on Inside the NBA, so I'm just trying to copy him. But anyways, there was some in-depth conversation about Josh Giddey.
Josh Giddey's like, Giddey, 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 Giddey.
Hey, okay, it's not a laughing matter, but the situation that Giddey finds himself in has made him enemy number one when he goes to every away arena. He's getting booed everywhere but Oklahoma. And it's not just a regular boo. It's loud enough to hear the boos through the broadcast. Now, I tried to do some research, but I really couldn't find a lot of information about the investigation. I couldn't find out how old Giddey was when he met this young lady. I don't know how old the young lady was when they met. And I couldn't corroborate any of the speculation that I saw on the internet. So I'm not even really going to go there. All I can say is what we do know for certain is that the Newport Beach police in California, they will not be pressing any charges against Giddey. On the other side of it, though, the NBA did state that they were going to wait for the legal investigation to end before they completed their own internal investigation. So now that that's over, you assume that the NBA has already been kind of digging into the situation to see what they're going to do. And even though no law was broken, you have to assume that the same logic that applied to Ja Morant the first time that he kind of brandished a gun on TikTok or whatever platform he was on, you got to assume that that same logic is going to apply to Giddy. So Ja, he was suspended due to the perception, really, of holding a firearm. He didn't break any laws. It was just the perception of holding a firearm. He got nicked for that. I think he ended up missing 8 games. So you got to assume that the perception of statutory rape, you know, you would think that might be subject to a suspension also. And really, that was kind of the point that everybody was arguing about on the lead chat, was like, hey, this guy has an alleged issue that seems way worse than just holding a gun while you're hanging around with your friends and stuff at the club. Even though I guess if the gun go off in a club, that could be pretty bad too. But either way, the point is, you got some allegedly bad things that look pretty bad going on. Either way, for fantasy, all this extra attention has really manifested itself in some really poor play from Giddy. Giddy is averaging career lows in points, rebounds, and assists. So we're going to keep it going and move on to the league standings. And at the top of the standings, you already know what time it is. Your reigning champ, the SD Star Sprinkle, stays at the top of the standings after an 8-4-1 win over Elhan. That is now 4 wins in a row for the SD squad. Largest movement up the standings belongs to Horseman. And as I said in the last episode, if he could just take advantage of playing against Swiper, he had an opportunity to make up some ground in the standings. And Horseman, I gotta give credit where credit is due. He did just that. He had a strong 9-4 victory over Swiper, and that moved him from 12th to 9th in the standings. Largest movement down the standings, this dishonor belongs to Jive Turkey. And this was after getting blown out by Irrelevant in a 10-3 loss. And the move moves him down from 5th to 8th in the standings. But at the bottom of the standings, you know what it is. But wait, Team Proof gets the win! Oh man, Proof out here winning matchups finally. So this win, it slows down the bleeding. He got a 7-6 victory over Rocket Red. And that ends an 8-week losing streak. Now, yes, technically, Proof can still break the all-time record for consecutive weeks at the bottom of the standings. But at least now, he guarantees that he doesn't tie the all-time record for consecutive losses. So we got two different records here. We got the consecutive weeks at the bottom of the standings. You can still win, but not move up the standings. But there is also extremely horrible record for consecutive losses in the row, and that little gem of a record, can you guess who it belongs to? Did you get it? Well, that record belongs to Free, who went by Mr. Freeze in the 2015-16 season. I'm sorry, it's just hard to read this without laughing, but this man lost their first 17 matchups of the season. He lost 17 in a row off jump. He didn't even have like a tie in between all of that. It was just straight losses. He didn't even tie one of them weeks. Oh man, crazy. So anyways, Proof, there's no way for Proof to tie that now. His losing streak ends at 8. But hey, he's moving in the right direction. So congratulations to Proof.
8.
But the countdown to the consecutive weeks at the bottom, it continues. I'm sorry, man. So from one squad's misery to another squad's misery, let's go ahead and get into the blowout of the week.
I'm speechless. This game was beyond embarrassing. The worst game of the season. They looked awful. You know, they didn't execute. They didn't do anything right.
It's the blowout of the week.
Week 15's blowout of the week belongs to Irrelevant, as they served up a good old-fashioned beatdown to Jive Turkey. It was funny because Dub was out here trying to call this shot, man, stating that Jive was on Boston watch. And boy, when I tell you, Mars jumped in them comments quickly, like, man, get out of here. You ain't on no Boston watch. He was quick to point out that Jive was on the Boston watch, but he was on the blowout watch. So Dub, you're halfway right. And when you look at this matchup, Irrelevant, he controlled the matchup the whole week. Going into Sunday's slate of games, he was up 8-5. And the categories that were still up in the air were 3 points made. Irrelevant led 64-60. Points, Jive led that 578-554. And turnovers, Jive led that. He had a 5-turnover gap, 42-47. With Jive leading two of the categories that were kind of up for grabs going into Sunday, and the score being 8-5 before the game started on Sunday, the best I would have predicted Irrelevant to do was 10-3. So, again, not sure where he got the Boston from. And looking at the management, Irrelevant, he made no moves going into Sunday. He already had a full active roster for Sunday. Jive, though, he made three adjustments. I guess technically two, because he was deciding who he wanted to play. He had added Torian Prince for Sunday. Looks like he found out that, you know, Torian wasn't going to play, dropped him, and then decided to go with Dennis Smith Jr. But even with adding two guys, he only had five active players compared to Dub's full roster. So he's down two men going into Sunday. And I'm nitpicking here, but with 3 pointers made being the only realistic category to flip for Jive anyways, you'd think he would have opted to add some 3-point shooters off the free agency. Instead, he picked up Caleb Martin, who in 5 games prior to Sunday was only averaging 0.8 3-pointers made at 36%. And then Dennis Smith, over those past 5 games, he was only averaging 0.6 3-pointers made at 30%. So a bit of a curious decision right there. But to be fair to Jive, both Dennis Smith and Caleb Martin, they ended up knocking down 1-3 apiece. Is this that if Jive would have made moves a little bit earlier or kind of realized what categories he wanted to go after, he had an opportunity to pick up a guy like Eric Gordon or Contavious Caldwell-Pope, who both got picked up prior to Jive making his moves on Sunday or for Sunday. All that's to say, didn't really like Jive's process there for his kind of late week management. I think, though, the loss here, it really can be a good lesson for Jive to just be a little more intentional about his late week ads, because come playoff time and Jive looks like he's really making that push to be in the playoffs. Again, amazing how a second year player tanked the year before, missed the playoffs, or his first rookie year missed the playoffs, second year made it all the way to finals. Jive now looks like he's trying to do the same thing. He missed the playoffs the first season. Really, Jive tried to stay out of last most of his first season, but he has opportunity now to make the playoffs. But anyways, to get back to the point, this is a lesson for playoff time, because you got to be real intentional about them ads, especially come playoff time. For Irrelevant, you look at the matchup, he kind of lucked into this blowout. And, you know, that's okay, because you need a bit of luck to go your way in any competition in life. You need a little bit of luck to win. But as I mentioned before, the realistic categories Irrelevant was trying to flip were points and turnovers. So you look at those two categories, and normally those are opposite strategies if you want to achieve success in those categories. So to win points, normally the rule of thumb is the more players, the better. But in order to win turnovers, normally that rule is the less players you have, the better chance you have at winning turnovers. But somehow, Irrelevant, he played his full lineup, didn't even worry about it. And the only player that registered turnovers on Sunday was Derek White with 3. Other than that, nobody had 6 other players that had 0 turnovers. That's amazing. That is freaking amazing. Although I saw points as the category that I thought had the most logical sense or most practicality to be flipped at the start of Sunday, Irrelevant, he would have needed 2 more points to win that category. So he got close, but didn't quite finish the job there with the points category. However, down 15 defensive rebounds going into Sunday, and Irrelevant outproduced Jive 37-16 in the defensive rebounds off the strength of Anthony Davis, who grabbed 11 rebounds, on Sunday. And then Derek White, he grabbed 9 from a guard. Oh my gosh, that was clutch. So he grabbed 9, and that solidified the win in the defensive rebounding category. But enough of the minutiae. Let's look at the big boy stats. And irrelevant, his dominant categories in week 13. Field goal percentage. His team shot 54.1%, which ranked first in the DHL. 3-pointers made. His squad knocked down 74, also ranked first. Points, 642. He was second in that category. And lost the category to the guy that ended up first. So, hey, what can you do? Defensive rebounds, 172. That ranked third. Steals, had 38. That ranked second. And again, crazy how this worked out. Opposite sides of the spectrum. Second in points, but also had the fourth lowest turnovers with only 50 turnovers for his team in week 13. Looking at that, I don't think it mattered who Irrelevant was playing in week 13. They likely was going to get a win regardless, just looking at the matchup and how the stats ended up playing out for Irrelevant. For Jive Turkey, wasn't a terrible week as far as the stats are concerned. He had some dominant categories also. 3-pointers made. They knocked down 66 of them. That was third. And again, kind of just tough luck because he went against a guy who ranked first in that category in week 13. So just tough luck there. Points, Jive ranked first with 642 points. Offensive rebounds, his team had 49 offensive rebounds. That ranked third, tied with Tank Management. The defensive rebounds, Jive came in fifth with 167. And then he also had the fifth lowest turnovers with 51. For Jive, when your team is producing at a level like that, you can't blame the players. So I just kind of circle back to the management, especially at the end of the week. I believe that needs a little bit more focused energy applied to it because I really feel Jive could have avoided this blowout. And we haven't done this in a while, but let's go ahead and look at the matchup players of the week. And from the winning team, it was a toss-up between Anthony Davis and Jalen Williams. But I'm going to go ahead and give this to the youngin', Jalen. In 4 games, he averaged 24.3 points, 6 assists, 2 steals, and 2 3-pointers made at 57% while shooting 58% from the field on 16 attempts. And from the losing team, I really wanted to shout out Keegan Murray because I don't think enough people are really respecting what Keegan has been doing this season. Like, he's really put together a really solid season. He's solidifying himself as the third option for the Kings. However, even though he had an impressive stat line, the Kings only played 2 games in week 13, so I couldn't give it to him. I feel like you got to at least play the 3 games in a week to qualify for this award. So for Jive, his standout player, I'm going with Miles Bridges, not only for the production, but he had the best efficiency out of all his high-producing players. And Bridges, he averaged 22.3 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, and 3.3 three-pointers made at 53% while shooting 47%. On 19 field goal attempts. And you know, we expect big names to get big buckets, but there's guys out there on the free agency that you're sleeping on. Let's go ahead and get into the fantasy sleeper of the week. Oh yeah, another week, and week 13 is no different. So as we always do, sit back, relax, pour yourself a little drink. If you like me, you like it bubbly, you like the Moscato, because you don't really got a palate for that bougie stuff. And that's what we're not about that with the sleepers. We like to get in the gutter. Let's go find it. So we're going to start off with the shooters. And out of Toronto, we have Gary Trent, who's rostered in 35% of leagues. And when you shoot as well as Trent did, you got to make this list. Trent was available for 3 of the 4 games that were scheduled in week 12, and he averaged 16.7 points and 4 three-pointers made at 57%. Lou Dort out in OKC, he's only rostered in 37% of leagues, and in 3 games, he averaged 14.7 points, 4.3 rebounds, 1 steal, and 3.7 three-pointers made at 48%. It wasn't just a hot week. Dort has been shooting career highs from the field and from the three-point line. Keep an eye out for him. Hey, man, it's shoot or shoot. Because if you go down to Memphis, you're going to find Luke Kennard. He's only rostered in 31% of leagues. And he really shouldn't be available as he is in most leagues. Kennard is taking full advantage of his opportunity. And in the three games in week 13, he averaged 14.3 points, 4.3 assists, and 3.7 three-pointers made at 52%. I don't know how this guy does it, but somehow he continues to be fantasy relevant. And I'm talking about Andre Drummond. Out in Chicago, he's only rostered in 30% of leagues. And this man is doing it in less than 20 minutes a night. But in three games, he averaged 9.3 points, 8 rebounds, 2 steals, and 1 block. If you need those defensive stats, Andre Drummond's your guy. We haven't talked about all the shooters yet. You gotta look no further than Sam Merrill. Now this guy, he's a real deep sleeper. He's only rostered in 10% of leagues. And in three games, he averaged 14.3 points, 4 rebounds, 4.3 assists, and 3.7 three-pointers made at 42%. We got another big on this list, and we're looking at Isaiah Stewart, Beef Stew from Detroit, rostered in 42% of leagues. Now, this man's talent confuses me because I really feel like he's playing out of position most of the time as a power forward. But boy, in week 13, this man played well. He's only available for 2 out of 3 games. But in those 2 games, he averaged 14 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 2.5 blocks, and 1.5 three-pointers made. But there can only be one, and you know how we do. But for this time, we're staying in Detroit again. And we're looking at Alec Burks. Only rostered in 40% of leagues. And this is a guy who's been added and dropped a lot, even in our league. I think he deserves a long-term home. Look at what he did in 3 games. He averaged 26.3 points, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 5.3 three-pointers made at 53%, while shooting 49% from the field on 15.7 attempts. It's your fantasy sleeper. Alec Burks. You are our fantasy sleeper of the week.
It's your fantasy sleeper of the week.
And we're flying through this one today, so we're going to go ahead and take a quick break here. On the other end, I got a phone-in conversation for you. Welcome back. I think you guys are going to enjoy this because I'm brought somebody basically out of retirement. We haven't heard from this guy in such a long time. So it feels good to get this person back on the podcast, back in your eardrums. Let's go ahead and get into our phone-in conversation. He's one of 2 managers to win in back-to-back championships. The first and only manager to win 6 championships. The originator of Roll Call. The first to put their thoughts on podcasts for DHL. I welcome to the show, Rock the Cradle. Cradle, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's good to hear from your voice. Looking forward to the content. I know we've got some stuff that's been coming out here lately, so I'm glad I get my turn to say my piece. Speak my truth, as the people say these days.
Well, you've been a hard guy to get a hold of. You are like the Andre 3000 of this league. What I mean by that is, like, everybody wants you to drop content, some new material, but
you made yourself scarce. You know, it's hard to get a hold of you. So fill in the league. What's been going on these last couple seasons? Why don't we hear from you as much anymore?
Yeah, just been had some changes with my responsibilities at work. And then just given some of my, as Andre might say, some of my outside interests, giving them some extra time. So that and the wife, and we got some travel going on once COVID, I shouldn't say COVID ended, but once we were kind of back to normal, I've been trying to do some traveling and stuff like that. So I've been a little more off the grid for sure, but still got to turn up these last couple months and be where I'm supposed to be.
I'm not going to say, hey, man, why can't you do the roll call? I get that. Like you said, priorities change. I understand that. But you're not even giving a little spice adding to the foolery in the league chat. You know, I know sometimes that you see stuff, and I know, you know, that the sometimes the group chat doesn't care what's going on. If you're busy, you know, when it pop off, it pop off. But, you know, I haven't even seen you kind of just get in the chat and just kind of throw a little meme or something in there. You know, it can we get a little bit of that back with the league?
It's funny because y'all the league, I got my notifications on, and I swear at all times of night, you know, I'm laying in bed 12:30 in the morning, league blowing up, page popping off. I'm at work trying to get some stuff done. So it's kind of like, so I'm aware of what's going on. I do look at it sometimes. I see y'all have gotten good at making polls, and I like how y'all put the trade stuff in there, the veto stuff in there. And I know with no message board, it kind of became a one-stop shop for everything. So I do look at it, but I'm like, some of the timing of these conversations and some of the stuff going on, I'm like, I gotta sit some of this stuff out. But I enjoy it. If I can get my butt to the playoffs, then you'll definitely see a lot more of me in the playoffs for sure.
Well, I understand that. And honestly, like you said, sometimes you be like, man, this thing don't never sleep. So I definitely turn off the league. I see the little dots flashing off when thing is going on in the league, but I turned the vibrate off for sure. Cause I was like, nah, this is causing too many problems. And then even my wife was like, Faith was like, can you just turn your phone upside down at night? Cause like when that light starts flashing, it wakes me up sometimes. I wake up and she's all mad. I don't even know what I did. I'm like, what you mad at me for? But you know, so I start having to do that at night now, where I just turn the phone over or just power it off completely. But yeah, so
I probably should start that, because I get those who texting you in the middle of the night? Nah. Man, you ain't gotta worry nothing about that. I'm trying to sleep just like you. Shit, I'm turning the opposite direction from the phone. But you know, I mean, you know how it goes. You know how it goes.
That doesn't mean they love us, man. That is. Well, last season, I remixed the roll call intro for the podcast, and I had Vars fill in with his commentary about the teams. What did you think about the job he did? And did you walk away from listening to his roll call feeling like he was giving teams a fair assessment?
I need to catch up on it. I'm behind. So I need to actually, I need,
well,
I need
is,
to
actually this, listen. I'm actually talking about from last season. Do you remember any of the podcasts last season just thinking, like, oh, that was funny, JB did a good job? Or do you even recall any of that or not? It doesn't really stand.
Man, I'm blanking. I just remember Duck Swan, man. I didn't know he was doing roll. I didn't know he took over roll call. So that's on me. I don't recall off the top of my head him doing it. But I can imagine he'd be entertaining just the little side conversations we have. So I kind of know what it would be. I have an idea what it would be without remembering.
Yeah, well, no problem. Hey, sometimes you can't copy a you can't always copy the original. So I get it. But let's go ahead. Let's move on to this season. What's going on currently? So that way we got this at the top of your head. And okay. Coming out the gate, Yahoo, they loved your draft. You were ranked number one coming out the draft by Yahoo. Obviously, a majority of the guys that you drafted them because you expected them to play well. So I still ask you, are there one or two players on your roster that you are surprised either in a good or bad way this season so far?
Yeah, I'm mostly in a bad way. I'm going to start with Okongwu from the Hawks. I thought he was going to be a breakout candidate, and I think he still has an outside chance of that happening if the Hawks start moving people before the trade deadline. So I'm being patient, holding on. But I thought, honestly, I would get, you know, I've been holding on to him all season, even though his production kind of hit and miss. But I really thought he was going to take a leap, kind of like Jabari Smith's another guy. I took him. I like a lot of what he does, but I thought, you know, he's 6'10", super athletic. I thought he'd be filling up the steals and blocks, and he really doesn't do that. So those are two guys in the later rounds I thought I'd get a little bit more from than I have. But I would say my first 8 or 9 picks, I mean, there's no bust in there. All of them have been pretty good. My problem is I think I made a mistake in how I projected some of their stats to be. So even though they're all good players, I'm not getting the category dominance in some of the stats I was expecting. A lot of these guys, I thought Bam and Tatum and Jabari Smith, I thought these guys would be filling up the defensive stats for me. And that really hasn't, most of those guys haven't played any defense. So I'm not as good there as I thought I was going to be. So I'm a little disappointed in myself for, you know, I'm not really dominating enough categories to be near the top of the league. And that's kind of on me. So nobody's really blown my mind as like above where I mean, I think Tatum, Trae Young, Bam, Bane when he was playing, Jared Allen. They're all doing about what I would expect them to do. Austin Reeves, they did what I expected them to do. Allen's kind of turned it on a little bit lately, but I'm keeping in mind Mobley's out, Darius Garland's out. You know, there's a lot of guys missing. So he's kind of, I think he's playing a little bit above his head while everybody's out. I think when those guys come back, he'll go back to, you know, 10 points, 8 rebounds, a block, which is what he generally is. So I don't know. I missed on my late round picks. I should have done a little better there, but it was okay. Draft was okay.
Yeah, and honestly, if you, by the time you get to the end of the regular season, you probably really only got about 7, maybe 8 players if you're really lucky that you drafted originally on your squad that are still on your squad. Either you got rid of them due to some type of trade or, like you said, this maturation of people getting injured or just not playing well and you got to move on. I will say, for me, when I looked at your squad, the person that stood out to me a little bit was I really thought Austin Reeves was going to be making a big leap, kind of just kind of going off of what he did near the end of the season, the regular season for the Lakers. It's not that he's been poor. And even though he's been back in the starting lineup over these last, I believe it is 6 or 8 games, he's been averaging 14.7 points, 6.2 assists, 0.7 steals, 1 three-pointer made, but at a poor 27%. So, you know, he starts making an extra 3 and can get that percentage up to the mid-30s. You're probably looking at a guy that's now averaging 16.5, 6 assists, 2 three-pointers made, and that's probably the guy that you really envisioned that you were going to have in the first place anyway. So he's not too far off. It's not like, oh, I just made a horrible, I just, you know, got no value out of that pick. But he is somebody that I thought was just going to just kind of come out of the gate running, basically.
I kind of agree with you. And he's one of the few guys, when they move him into the starting lineup, I actually think that's worse for him. I think when he's playing with, he'll always get the assists because the way they use him, you know, a lot of times he's bringing the ball up to give Bron a break or he's kind of initiating offense. So he'll get his 5, 6 assists. But I think he gets a lot more usage and a lot more volume when he's with the second unit. So I actually, even though his minutes might be, you know, 3, 4 minutes less off the bench, I think he's a lot more of a go-to guy. Let Russell and Bron and Davis do their thing with the starters. I like when he came off the bench and he was just getting it, getting buckets and being super aggressive with the second unit. So we'll see. I don't know. The Lakers don't have the youngest and most durable starting lineup. So, you know, there's always time for opportunity to come back. But I don't like where the Lakers are in the standings, where they're kind of right around 500. And I don't think boys can just afford to be sitting for no reason or load managing or any of that stuff. So we'll see. I'm with you. I agree with you. He hasn't taken the leap from the playoffs, but he hasn't been bad. I like that he plays 3 positions, so he kind of can fill in where needed. And he's fine. I mean, he's not the problem on my team, but I thought he'd give me a little more. I agree.
In the last episode, Tank said that you sent him the trade to send out Desmond Bane and Tyus Jones to bring in De'Aaron Fox. How did that trade go down from your perspective, and how do you feel Fox will transform your team?
First of all, I'm so mad at Proof because I offered him that same trade for Lillard And he didn't respond. And then like a week later, after I make my trade and Tank flips those guys for the same guy I was trying to get, I was like, what in the hell, Proof? God dang. So let me start with that. I'm a little annoyed with Ken right now for that. He did me dirty. But as far as Fox, it's not as much about Fox as it was my feeling about Bane, if I'm being honest. Because that was right around the time Jaw was out for the season. I think our trade went through maybe a day before Marcus Smart went down. But
no, after actually.
Okay, so it was after that too. So, but I just had a feeling with Memphis looking at the standings, and then Jaw went out. We saw what they looked like when Jaw was out in them first 25 games. I mean, they were, I think it was like 6-19 or something. I started getting those vibes like, I don't know if Bane is going to be around when I need him most, even as much as I like him. So, like I told you, I sent out a little feeler to Proof. I was looking at Lillard. I sent out a couple more feelers, see what I could get. And I felt like out of what I could get done, Fox was about the best value I could get for Bane. And I wasn't losing the same three-point production, pretty much the same assist. A lot of the stats were kind of similar.
Yeah.
And Fox is on a team where I think the West is kind of tough near the top and middle. I don't see him sitting out no games. I think the Kings want to stay out of the play-in tournament. So he seems like a guy I would expect late in the season to be turning it on. So it's not so much about what I saw in Fox. I just was trying to get as much value as I could and not lose all the threes and assists I had. Because I also traded Tyus Jones in that too. I was just trying to get as much value. Fox is a guy I would think about trading, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't know if he's the best fit for my team, but what do I think he's going to give me? Well, you all know that. He can score. He really has developed his three-point shooting. That's good. Yeah, he gets over 1.5 steals, which I just told you I didn't like the way my defensive categories have been. I thought I'd be better there. So he does help me in a category that's important there. And he gives me another point guard that I can play when Trey is unavailable or when Trey don't play that day. So I need a non-Hawk player. I got a lot of Hawks on my team that I rely on. So he's a good player. I'm not looking to give him away, but he's not a guy that I'm married to either.
Okay. And, you know, I figured that was the reason that those injuries just kind of lit a fire under you. It was like, okay, I gotta move on before things kind of go south. And I mean, the timing was great. I know you didn't get the original guy that you wanted in Lillard, but just the fact that you were able to get off Bane and he goes down basically a day and a half later after your trade, it's, you know, that's a good piece of business. And then not only that, you know, to pick up Vince Williams that plays for Memphis now as, you know, your pickup from dealing out those two players, using him for your to fill out your roster. I know he's not really exploding offensively, but he is filling up the stat sheet. So that was a nice little piece of business for yourself.
Yeah, Vince is the kind of player I like. You're right. I think he's only like a 10 to 12 point guy, but I like that he does give me five, six rebounds, 3-4 assists. He plays some defense. He can knock down a three or two. So he's exactly the kind of guy I like to have as a role player. I don't view him as just an add drop guy. I kind of like what he's given me. And I think there's opportunity for him to continue doing that probably the rest of the season in Memphis.
Well, Credo, I can't have you on here and just have you talk about yourself. And this guy, he's aiming to be historically bad in the DHL. He's going for the all-time record. And who I'm asking you about is, of course, Team Proof, the car wreck that we all can't stop looking at. You know, both you guys aren't as visible as you used to be in the league. You know, like you said, you're working, you're being a little bit busy, yet you are a manager that still manages to be competitive. You're still always in the playoff hunt. But Proof these last three seasons, he's been on the outside looking in. So what is going on with Team Proof? What do you think? Why do you think he's been so bad this season?
Well, I like to look at the team and the situation from beginning to end. So what has Proof been known for in the past? It used to be, first of all, his trades. I mean, he used to be well known for pulling these, you know, 2-for-1, building these all-star teams. And we used to say, well, you can't win with all-star teams. You got to actually have role. We also joke about that stuff. But nobody was looking forward to playing Proof when you looked at the names. So he used to make these explosive trades and just had a stacked roster. And I'm looking at Proof's trades this year. I mean, this most recent one, I don't even know that I need to and some of it, I guess, is bad luck a little bit. But, I mean, he gets Bane, and then Bane, we ain't going to see Bane for, if he's lucky, 2 months if he comes back, and gave up Lillard. So that trade was a killer. He had one earlier. He traded Paul George to you for Devin Vassell and Kobe White. Kobe White has, I got to say, Kobe White has been a lot better than I thought he'd be this season. And LaVine constantly being hurt keeps him a lot more relevant. Devin Vassell's had a nice season as well. So I'm not saying those guys aren't good players. I think they're top 50, top 60 type guys so far. But you're giving up Paul George. Paul George is a fantasy. When he's healthy and playing, he is probably in a 14-team league, he's probably a first rounder when he's going. So I don't know. I mean, the trades he's making, I think he's giving up the premium talent in these trades, which is usually not the way he used to operate. We start with the draft. I thought Proof had a pretty shaky draft. You know, second round, he takes Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges is great. I mean, he's an Iron Man. He'll do a little bit of everything. You can definitely count on him to play 82 games. He's one of the very few guys I can say that about. But you take him at 18 overall, that's kind of a stretch. You take Vucevic at 46. Vucevic, the defense is gone. The three-point shooting, now I think he's at 26, 27% from three. And he's only
I will say, though, about Vucevic is that has been – Ken has been riding with Vucevic for, it feels like, 7, 8 years now. Like, Vucevic always seems to find a way on Team Proof's team. So he's probably a little bit blinded by the loyalty with that one.
It could be. You're right. And all of us have guys that we do gravitate toward. But I will say Vucevic's game, he'll still get you 16 and 10. But if you look at the other peripheral stats, you know, he's under one steal. He's under one block. The three-point shooting has disappeared. He's never gotten to the free throw line. That's never been really a part of his game. His field goal percentage now, I think, is around 46%, which for a center that's not making threes, that's really not good enough. And you know he's playing with DeRozan and LaVine when he's healthy. And now we got Kobe White and all these other guys he's playing with. So he's never going to be one of the primary options on offense anymore. So he kind of, I don't know, he took a diminishing return in Vucevic. Brad Beal in round five. I mean, Brad Beal, I think he's played 17 games. So he's missed more than half the season. He goes to a team with Booker and Durant. So what do you expect is going to happen? He's down around 17 points a game. He's just a nice player. He's not somebody that is Washington Wizards Brad Beal, where he's out there carrying the team. And that's something you should see coming. Proof's a veteran manager. He knows Brad Beal's not going to be what he was in Washington. Kuminga, I could see that there's possibly some upside, but you hear him already come out complaining about Steve Kerr. A lot of the Warriors young guys complaining about Steve Kerr not giving them opportunity. CP3, I mean, you knew in the beginning of the season he wasn't even a starter. He's getting up in his mid-30s. He's always hurt. You know, he's always going to miss a chunk of season hurt. We already see he's sidelined right now. That's not really a surprise. So, I mean, we can keep going on the list, but I think a lot of Proof's early round and mid-round picks, that should be the foundation of your team. Most of these guys are either in decline or just not doing enough to really be on a roster. So when you look at the trades, you look at the draft, you're not seeing good things. Okay, so how do you acquire talent if it's not through the draft and if it's not through trades? You use free agency. You use the waiver wire. Proof, I think, has single-digit moves in the waiver wire. What is he? I think he has 7 moves this season, something like that. I'm not looking at it off the top of my head. But he's not very active on the waiver wire either. So when you take all those things into account, I don't really think it's that hard to see why Proof is struggling. And now he's been making some panic trades, and he kind of reduced the amount of elite talent he has. So I think he probably sees the writing on the wall. You know, when you're 18 games behind the 13th place team, you know, I think we're all smart enough to know it's a wrap for Proof. I mean, we'll see him in 2 years, baby.
Yeah, it's just crazy that he is now, or looks like he's locking himself into being the first champion to get rotated out the league, which I I never would have thought I would have saw the day. For as bad as things can get in fantasy, I thought I would at least see proof, kind of out hustling, out work people to at least not finish last. And it seems like he's going to do that. Well, while we're on proof, the record consecutive weeks at the bottom of the standings, 17. 16 is the current record, and that was set by Sid. Proof has a chance to get to 17. Obviously, we're thinking he's going to get rotated out. So you believe he's breaking this record for 17 weeks at the bottom of the standings, correct?
First of all, I'm amazed that you keep track of records for the bottom of the standings. It's impressive that you even track that, voice. So let me give you your due for that. As far as your question, I just got to be honest with you. How do you see this team making up 16 games to even get to 13th? I mean, you tell me.
Yeah, I can't see it. Even if he won out, because you figure even if he starts winning, it's going to be 8-5, 7-6 wins. Like, he's going to be squeaking out wins. That's not it. He needs blowouts. And I don't know who – if you couldn't blow out Swiper when you had the chance. A few weeks back, he played Swiper, yes, swiping. If you can't blow out Swiper, the guy that's right above you, the guy that's known for being a little lackadaisical, could we say, with his fantasy management, if you can't do that, everybody else, it's going to be a lot harder to do that. And it's going to get to a point, because I'm going to keep bringing it up, I'm going to keep drawing attention to it. It's going to get to a point where it's like the Detroit Pistons, where nobody wants to be that person to lose to you. You know, nobody wants that stain on their reputation. It's going to get to a point where people feel like that, and they're just going to make sure that they spend extra attention to make sure I'm not giving up this win to proof. So, it's a little sad, but like you said, we'll see him back in 2 years, and hopefully by then he'll be ready to get locked in and focused again.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're not on video, but we might as well pour out the champagne for proof. We could do that now with 8 weeks left. Even this week, you know, he's playing Rocket Red in 11th, and he's down in this matchup. So we'll see how it finishes out tonight. But he really can't afford to, you know, like you said, he was playing the team above him last week. He's playing a team in 11th this week, and he's not even winning those games. So, I mean, eight weeks left is still time. But to make up 16 games, I mean, that's a significant amount of ground to make up. So I just don't see this roster having enough to get it done. And proof is not showing enough desire to make that happen, in my opinion. So I think it's over.
Well, I want to get to another kind of big picture topic. And I want to talk about your opinion on the conversation about waiver priority versus the free agency acquisition budget, or FAB, F-A-A-B. Do you think that's something worthwhile to change, or do you like the importance of having the high waiver to pick up your players?
Let me say this. First of all, I'm an OG in this league, and I usually have been resistant to change. I didn't want the IR spot in the beginning. I've never wanted moves capped. So some of these issues that we've been talking about in the past, I usually didn't want, but I think the IR spot's been fine. It hasn't really been a problem the way I thought. I've seen the FAB used more so in football than basketball. I think there's a strategy with using the waiver wire and saving your priority or using it aggressively, depending on where you stand. I think there is some strategy in that. I mean, I will let some guys go that I would be interested in if I had a higher priority just to hold out. But I think the FAB, to me, I'm okay with that too, because that gives everybody a chance at every player. And if you want it bad enough, you'll use the budget and prove it. So I could be okay with the FAB if that's where the league wants to go. I would be in favor of that if I saw a proposal come out for that topic. I think that would make it a little more interesting to let everybody have access to anybody that's on the wire. That's my opinion. What is your opinion, voice? I'd be curious to hear what you have to say.
I'm more of the latter when you talked about the strategy for your waiver wire. I used to be a guy, I need to hold on to it because you never know who might drop. It's like that year that Pearland Chipmunks got to the championship because Paul George got dropped.
Correct.
And all of a sudden, oh, Paul George is not out for the season, and Pearland uses waiver, and now he made it to, like, how the heck does Pearland Chipmunks make it to DHA finals? You know? So, like, I used to be a guy like, nah, I gotta hold out for that chance. And then as the years have gone by, probably the last, I want to say 4 or 5 years, I've changed my approach to that, where I'm just I'm aggressive because the way I feel is there's no guarantee that the perfect guy is going to drop and you're going to be able to use your high waiver. I've seen people sit on a active manager. I'm not even talking about, you know, the Swipers or the SIDs of the world this year, team proof. I'm talking about active managers that sit on a high waiver priority and basically never use it until maybe the playoffs. And then, okay, you use it on a guy, which is cool, but really you're just using it because the intensity of the playoffs is on and you don't have time to just be sitting there and holding on to your high waiver. So for me, I'm just more, okay, just be aggressive, cycle through it, and I'll nickel and dime everybody to death. And then if I miss out on somebody that's big time, well, then I just missed out on somebody that was big time. So now, though, I think I'd rather have the FAAB, the FAB, just because I think with as active as our league has gotten, with as much of the non-competitive people that have been weeded out of this league, I think because we have such an active league, such a competitive league, a lot of people are normally paying attention on top of setting their rosters, you know, whatever, whatever. I think that it would only add to the intensity of our league because now everybody feels that they have a chance for whoever might be out there on the waiver wire. And every once in a while, I don't know if you do this, but sometimes you get to a point where you're like, I'm not even putting in a waiver for this guy because I know my stuff is too low. Yeah, I'm not, I know everybody saw what I saw. I'm not going to get him. And, you know, that's not the right, you know, you should always put in the waiver just in case you get lucky. But there's been times where I fell, you know, to victim to that thinking and I didn't put in a waiver. Just like, I'm not going to waste my time. I'm not even going to try to set an alarm to wake up. I know that guy's going to be gone. I'm just going to look and see who got him, you know. But with the FAB, that changes that. Now it's like, okay, well, I actually do have a chance. Do I want to risk $0? Do I want to risk $100? How much do I want to risk of my budget? Because I really do think this guy is somebody I believe in. And it just shows, I think the FAB gives you a chance to show how much research you're putting into these guys that you think might blow up or pop off the waiver wire.
I think it's very interesting. And I think it's very interesting, even if you don't win the player, but you get to see the different bids and you can get an idea of who's interested in what player, mm-hmm. who's kind of thinking the way I am. If I want to get a guy I really like, what do I think that's going to cost based on what I see people bidding on for other people? And I think it's just a very interesting, but you still have to show some restraint. I mean, I don't want to blow my whole budget in week three.
Cam Thomas or somebody.
Yeah. So I think it makes it, I don't know. I think that would be a good way for the DHL to evolve in the, what I hope is the near future. That's a really good idea. I like it.
Well, Cradle, that's all I have for you today. But before I let you go, is there anything else that you want to say to the league or anything you need to get off your chest?
Man, I don't have a lot to be getting off my chest. I'm an ace. So I'm pretty disappointed in my own performance before I start talking crazy to everybody else. So I will say, again, I'm going to compliment the rest of the league. It is really, really hard to win consistently in this league, especially if you're not putting in the daily work. Whether you're a past champion or not, that really doesn't make much difference. So I definitely have found, even with what I thought was a solid roster. If I'm just sitting pat setting a lineup, that ain't gonna win a whole lot of games. That's got me at 500 for most of the season now. So I'm a little more locked in on my management the last couple of weeks, and I gotta stay focused. But I'm gonna give credit to the rest of the DHL. You're right. When you made that comment a little earlier about weeding out the unfocused managers, and everybody used to talk about how it was the focus homie click, you can definitely see it. There's no question about it. There are no weeks off. There are no easy matchups. There's nobody not setting lineups. There's nobody not doing what they're supposed to do. Even too legit today. I thought I was hoping he missed a guy in his lineup. I saw him switch him at the last second. I was hoping he'd take that zero. He's not going to. So good job, too legit. Shout out to you. But yeah, it's been a really fun, interesting league. I think it's pretty wide open. There's some very strong rosters, and people know how to manage now. So I'm looking forward to the end of this season. I think we're going to go all the way down to the final week. We're going to have the same shenanigans that we're used to seeing in the final week. You know how we do, Nick. So I just want to get out of this eighth so I'm not a part of all that. So So that's all I got.
Real quick, you had said something where you were like, I had started paying attention a little bit more a few weeks ago, and I was so pissed off at you. I was like, oh, now all of a sudden he want to add drop every day when our matchup come up? He been adding, you know, maybe once here or there. You've been setting your lineup, but you haven't been adding. Then all of a sudden, you got like three or four ads in the first 3 days of our match. I'm like, oh, that's what's going on here? Oh, man.
I had to look. Well, first of all, I seen you was near the top of the league. So I was like, all right. And even though you have a designated rivalry week, I mean, this is a little bit of a rivalry. I looked at the roster. I was like, dang, you know, Paul George, Kawhi, Jokic. I'm like, if I sit here and fool around sitting pat, I'm like, this dude going to blow me out. And sure enough, I think it was 10-3 on, I don't know, Thursday or Friday. I was down 10-3. I was like, dang. I was like, I got turnovers and fouls, but that shit's embarrassing. So, yeah, I knew I was going to be in trouble. I still got beat pretty convincingly. The score looked a lot better than the matchup really was, because if it was the playoffs, I mean, that thing was wrapped up early. So take it as a sign of respect, because I was looking at the roster. I was like, and the way that the lineups for each day looked, I was like, I don't think I could just sit pat and not get blown out. So I want to just shout out the league. This is definitely the best fantasy league that I play in by far. It's been that way for well over a decade now. So I appreciate you all. Look forward to hearing the pod. Thank you, Voice, for doing what you do, because I appreciate how much work it is to consistently provide content and then have that expected of you. So I appreciate what you do in there. And good luck the rest of the season, boys. Let's go. Let's get it.
Y'all heard Cradle. He's looking to make some moves still. De'Aaron Fox is on the block, because if it makes Cradle's team better, he's trying to get off of that playoff bubble. So see him if you think De'Aaron Fox is a good fit for your squad. But we're going to go ahead and wrap this up here. As always, appreciate you guys spending part of your day with me talking about fantasy basketball. And just remember what we're here to do.